You're listening to the Heroes Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome back to Red Shirts and Runabouts, part of the Heroes Podcast Network. We are your weekly Star Trek show where we talk about all things Star Trek, from video games, movies, episodes, favorite characters, and all kinds of fun storylines. I'm one of your regular hosts, Gregory Bosco, and with me as always is Derek, but we also have a very special guest, Timothy Jackson. Go ahead and say hello to our fans out there.
Hello.
So we've been trying to spice things up, get some of our friends and other podcast stars and guests on the show. This week, we're continuing our Mechbach, which is we kind of compare our episodes and discuss some of our favorite topics. It gets a little interesting, especially when we start really peeling back that Star Trek onion. Timothy, why don't you share the topic that we chose this week?
So this one we chose was the best Pulaski episode from Season 2 of Star Trek The Next Generation.
Yeah, kind of the only opportunity to do that topic, you know. Season 4, best Pulaski, probably wouldn't be as interesting.
Or season 3, or any other season, really.
Our options would be a little more limited, aside from her two appearances on Star Trek, the original series, I guess it would be. That would be
her best TOS appearances, which there are only a couple of them. There's only two that you could do, so...
And she's a different character, right?
Yeah, like two different characters, I think, right?
Yeah, so this is it. This is our only shot to do best Pulaski episodes.
But in this week, Timothy and I are going to be kind of squaring off with Derek doing the judging. Last week was our best Riker episode. And as you all are probably familiar with, we kind of do a little bit of a rehash. And I think Derek even has digging up the poll results from our online. It's always kind of interesting to see the discussion we have on the cast and then go to look at the results online. So, Derek, do you get those numbers?
I do. So, basically the way we do this is every week, a couple hours after the episode is published, we also put a poll on Twitter. So you can listen to the episode, and then you can vote for which episode of the Mechbah you think is the best. And then we'll talk about it the following week. So, as Greg said, last week was our best Riker episode, also of TNG Season 2. And it was Measure of a Man versus the Icarus Factor. And this one, usually our polls are pretty close, usually in the 50 to 40 ranges. This one's a bit of a one-sided. It's 88% for Measure of a Man, which was surprising to me. I really thought the Icarus Factor was going to take the listener poll.
I almost wish, you know, the wish we could change Star Trek. His dad was prominent in Icarus Factor. I almost wish he would have had more, mainly. I kind of really like the actor they had for his father.
Mm-hmm.
But I think people thought it was just like a throwaway one-off episode. Whereas Measure of a Man was an excellent episode, but it's got Data facing a challenge to his Starfleet career and Riker and Picard, like all at their finest. They're both great episodes, but...
Drawing a blank on the Icarus Factor.
So Riker's dad shows up to basically give him the offer of a promotion to captain of a ship. And Riker, this is the second time Riker has been given the opportunity to command a starship, and it's kind of about all of the unresolved conflicts between William and his father, mainly dealing around William Riker's mother's death and how his father kind of sort of abandoned him at like the age of 13, that kind of stuff, you know. And so they play that fake, totally fake kind of Asian-style martial arts battle.
Probably one of the most embarrassing martial arts arenas you see outside of, like, American Gladiators did it better.
At least that was better. It was a holodeck, wasn't it?
No.
It was a real thing?
It was like...
There's no excuse then.
They got these helmets that blind them, and they use, like, sensor wands to find each other, and they have to flip it around really quick, and there's a bludgeon on the opposite side. I guess
the fact that I remember the Measure of a Man more than the Icarus Factor kind of tells which one I would choose on that one. So
it was almost like they had watched the original Star Wars and saw the scene where Luke's got the blaster shield down and he's, you know, doing the lightsaber training against the little globe, right? And they were like, what if we did that but with sticks?
And he's fighting another person.
Right. So yeah, it's terrible. But they try and play it off like it's a real Asian martial art that is created in the future at some point. And I don't know if that was offensive to people of Asian descent or Asian culture or not, but it certainly seemed like it could have been.
It's a Star Trek version of Taris Kasi then from Star Wars then.
Almost.
Sort of.
Less hand-to-hand combat. This is all weapons-based, but it's kind of along those lines. It's supposed to be that mystical arena kind of combat where they're like, you've been cheating my whole life, and I never knew it. And at the same time, you're like, Riker's been playing this game for like 30 years, and never knew.
You just found out your dad's cheating?
You just found out. You know, maybe we don't want you to be in command of the Ares right now. Why don't you just stay right where you are, buddy?
Okay.
So yeah, so it went to Measure of a Man, and so that was last week's poll. So thank you very much to everybody who voted in that. We truly appreciate it. The poll for this episode will be up on our Twitter channel as well, at RedShirtsPod. So please vote and retweet that for us. And next week we'll be doing our final TNG season 2 mechbah, which we have a topic for, but we're not going to reveal that. So.
Still in negotiations.
Negotiation, right. But yeah, so you guys each picked an episode. So, Greg, which episode did you pick?
Mine is obviously from Season 2. It's Episode 7, Unnatural Selection, which, for those of you who don't know Star Trek Next Generation, it's the episode where people, spoiler alert, really old age was a problem. And that's how I figured out a lot of my friends from college remember that episode. They don't remember what happened, but they remember like, that was the, okay. Yeah, well, now we remember.
For some reason in my head, it's always a different episode than it turns out to be. You know, because I feel like it should be something where the crew is like mutating or falling apart or aging or something, but it's not.
That's Season 7.
Right. Like Genesis. Yeah. That's a great episode. I love that one.
You sort of expect it to be kind of a callback to the Deadly Years from Star Trek, the original series, much how the Season 1 episode, The Naked Now, was a callback to The Naked Time in the original series. And when I first saw Unnatural Selection, that's kind of what I was thinking. I'm like, oh, are they going to call back to the Deadly Years? That's a little tacky, but yeah, I'm on board with it.
I mean, Season 2 was kind of a tough season for TNG because it was a writer's strike. And so they were lucky that there was a canceled Star Trek Phase 2 that they could borrow scripts from.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Yes.
I don't know for sure that Unnatural Selection was one of those, but the season definitely used several. So.
It kind of feels that way, especially, you know, we'll talk about this when we're actually doing the comparison, but there's not a lot of pizzazz to this episode.
No.
There's not a lot of flair, or even the sick bay looks a little different, and things, yeah, there's a lot of viewing stuff on monitors, which I noticed during my rewatch. I watched it again over the weekend and again today at work. I mean, on my lunch break, I swear. But I'm watching, I'm like, man, there's a lot of people.
Lunch break there.
Well, I had to divide it up, and I had to divide and conquer. But it's like you're watching, I'm like, man, there's a lot of talking to people on monitors here.
Yeah, TNG has a lot of that, whether it's the view screen or some like workstation on the back of the bridge. You know, someone's always talking to some screen or something.
Something that I noticed when I was watching it, I'm like, are there any guys in sickbay? Are they all just girl nurses in this episode? Because that was all I was seeing.
It's entirely female nurses in this episode, which they had some male nurses, but they don't show up in this.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen them before. I know they're on the ship somewhere, but they're not in this episode, which I thought was kind of interesting.
And I have a theory that we'll talk about when we start doing the actual review.
Ooh, good deal.
But it probably doesn't make any sense, and I'll get laughed at again. But I'm okay with that. I got thick skin. Anyways, Timothy, talk about what your choice was.
So the issue here is that the one episode in The Next Generation Season 2 that actually is a full-on Pulaski episode is Unnatural Selection. So I was kind of tasked with trying to find another one that was actually a bona fide Pulaski episode, and I wasn't exactly successful, but this one definitely does have a lot of Pulaski in it, which is Up the Long Ladder. And that one is basically, they go to a planet like they do in all Star Trek episodes. You know, they go to a planet and they're finding this colony that's in trouble. And one colony is all sort of, they're very much, what's the word? Agriculture is their thing. They have a lot of livestock. And
it's a rural population.
Yeah, they're all Irish and everything. Yeah. And the other colony that they run into is completely opposite. All scientific and all... And apparently all of their... Spoiler alert. All their people died except for five, and so they had to, like, clone themselves to prolong themselves. And they started out on the same ship, but they ended up separating and going to two different planets and developing completely different societies because the base was...
Technology versus not.
Yeah, basically.
Right? Yeah. So, yeah, that's kind of interesting. So I will say I am surprised that neither of you picked Elementary Dear Data.
Okay, before we started recording, that's the one we were talking about.
The pre-show. We had the
pre-show. We had a little bit of a pre-show, but we didn't record it. We were actually talking about that episode because she's like a hostage to Moriarty.
She is, and I think that's the episode that gets her character a lot of hate because the whole premise of the episode is that she... kind of is condescending and talks down to Data, who was like the fan favorite character at the time. And I mean, still probably is the fan favorite character, but especially in 1988-89. So she kind of is showcased quite a bit in that one, but usually in a way that's not liked. So I was a little surprised neither of you went that direction. But
so when I was looking through that, I saw that one, but I haven't watched it in a while. And I wasn't thinking her. I'm thinking... Okay, Data, Geordi, and Moriarty. And I'm not really thinking of any other main characters in that one that are shining. Those are basically the three. And then, of course, Picard comes in and does his thing.
Right.
Do they all show up in that episode? Worf hops in.
Everyone. I think that's it, though.
Yeah.
I think that's it. Because Dr. Crusher shows up in season one for the big goodbye.
Yeah.
Right? She goes to the holodeck in that one, but... unrelated. So, yeah. Okay. Well, then what we're going to do here is we're going to take a short break, and then when we come back, we're going to dive into our first episode in this mechba for the Best Pulaski of TNG Season 2.
Hey guys, it's Derek of Gamer Heroes, the Heroes Podcast Network's dedicated video game podcast series. Join us every other week as John and I talk video game news, what we're playing now, and other major topics in the video game industry. We cover everything from esports to indie games. We also interview developers and publishers. So join us every other Wednesday for new episodes. We'll see you there.
All right, and we are back. So we are going to kick things off with Greg's episode, the first of our mechba.
Well, and of course, the episode opens up with one of my favorite Star Trek things they do, the MacGuffin. You know, the ship's en route to another mission, or en route to another mission, another planet to do, another base to do something.
They're going to a planet.
They're going to a planet. And then mystery distress signal from like another sector over, and we're the only ship in range. Because that's exciting. It's fine. I love the MacGuffins. It's just a thing they do.
I'm convinced that there's only one Starfleet vessel in service at any given time.
You are not wrong. It's like, you know, and you are not wrong. It's like when Vedra's approaching Earth and it's like, you know, the Enterprise is the only ship in range. I'm like, are you sure?
You sure there's nothing else that can push it? Like
this thing's like the size of a solar system, but anyways. So it opens up with that MacGuffin, and it's like this distress signal from another starship, a supply ship, which happens to be a reused Reliant. It's a Miranda-class model. They just kind of doctored up a little bit. But it's the USS Lantry. And they get the distress signal, and the other MacGuffin is a distress signal, like, fades away. And Data comes in, he's like, well, we're still receiving a signal from the ship. It's just, we're not receiving any communication anymore. So they warp 7. You know, actually, they actually ponder it. Now, when you rewatch the episode... they get the distress signal, they're listening to the distress, and there is literally like 30 or 45 seconds of them standing around before they take action. And I always remember that because I'm like, man, it's a distress signal, and you just identified it's from another Starfleet ship. And you're pondering, you're like, I don't know. we had some plans. Anyways, so they go to the Lantry, and I love it because they finally do something that's... this is when I've always kind of felt, even though it's a writer's strike, I always kind of started thinking every episode season of Next Generation got better and better. Mm-hmm. And this is that one time where they're like, there's no life form readings, there's nothing on board that we can detect. Counselor Troy, I sense nothing. Which is... kind of her thing.
that could mean any number.
But then
look in your crystal ball. It's called Deanna Troi.
Yeah, exactly. But then Riker and Picard are like, hey, we could use the computer to take over. Riker actually had the idea, I believe it was. We can use our computer to take over them, turn on the view screen, at least look into the bridge and see what happened. And I know people have brought that up in Star Trek before. Like, why don't they, you know, we can kind of like remote activate webcams now.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's 30 years ago when they're making this, so I'm not knocking them for that. But it's cool because they open up the view screen and it's like immediately they're like, something is definitely wrong here.
Mm-hmm.
And they're zooming in on some of the characters and they're like, all right, well, I don't know what happened on that ship, but whatever it is bad. And they zoom in and the characters are essentially all dead from old age. And I got to give them credit because whether they use makeup and prosthetics or they just put more makeup and prosthetics on some of the more aged actors and actresses at the time, but they looked really good. I mean, the captain's in his seat. And he definitely looks dead in a non-pleasant way. And not like a MacGuffin disease, again, that my favorite word, that just kills him instantly. It's like they got older and older and older and older, just a little bit more rapid, but they went through an entire aging process.
Mm-hmm.
And they have no idea what happened. They're able to get some of the logs downloaded and figure out what kind of an idea. And that's when they realize that they made a stop a couple days into the past at, like, Darwin Station. And, of course, anybody that likes science hears the word Darwin, they're like, okay, well, evolution. I mean, most people...
That was a little bit...
It's a little bit.
It's a two on the nose.
Too off.
It's a little too on the nose.
The episode's called Unnatural Selection, Darwin Station.
So you get Unnatural Selection, Darwin Station, a ship full of people died from rapid aging. So I think most fans that, you know, I was, you know, how old was I? I was like 7, 8. I didn't know what the hell was going on. But when I'm rewatching when I'm older, I'm like, oh man, how... Now I get why my brothers kind of were all laughing when they're watching this. It's like Unnatural Selection, Darwin Station. But anyway, so they kind of figure out what's going on. And I like it because they immediately, the other stuff that they do is they immediately jump into, like, is this a quarantine situation? And this is the first time they've ever done that on the Next Generation.
Mm-hmm.
Where they're like, we're going to have to quarantine the vessel because we don't know what killed them. And Pulaski, of course, is immediately involved with, we should beam somebody over so we can do an investigation, we can do an inspection, or do some medical tests. And of course, they're all like, are you crazy? We have no idea what this is, what happened to these people, what killed them. We just know that they're all dead. And the sensors are showing nothing. So they quarantine the vessel and immediately go to Darwin Station to figure out what's kind of going on. And of course, with the overall plot, you know, they get to Darwin Station, and the moment they're on the view screen, you know, the one doctor... It's like, last week I just celebrated my 35th birthday, which, kind of ironic, last week I celebrated my 36th birthday, so hopefully I don't die of rapid aging.
Stay away from Darwin Station.
I'm going to stay away from Darwin Station and anything that's a supply ship.
Right, right.
But, you know, when they're kind of doing the investigation and everything and talking to people, they're realizing that, like, the first officer on the Lantry had, like, a Thalusian flu.
Right.
Which... You know, even the station's like, oh, yeah, the first officer is one of the people that beamed down. And I can't remember. I'm looking through my notes. It doesn't seem like that they dropped off any supplies or anything. So I couldn't really figure out why the Lantry ever stopped there. I don't know if you guys remember or not. I thought it was
a supply drop-off, but they weren't very specific about it. Like, that wasn't really
focus. They just called it a supply ship. Were they picking up supplies? Were they dropping off supplies? You'd think they'd be picking up. I mean, it's a station. Aren't stations supposed to have
a medical research station. So I took it more as they were dropping off some supplies of either maybe food or chemicals or...
Tribbles.
You know, tribbles, of course.
It was the Tribble's fault.
To a station named Darwin. Here's a bunch of Tribbles. Good luck. May the force be with you. And they actually said, may the force be with you.
Yep.
But, you know, they always kind of could laugh then because the first officer beamed down.
Mm-hmm.
So if they were delivering supplies, he went down to help deliver supplies. Or if they're gathering supplies, he beamed down to help gather supplies. So either way, you're kind of like, why'd the first officer beam down?
Oh, they could have just used the transporter.
They could have just used the transporter.
Well, I mean, think about it, though. If it was the original series, the captain would have gone down. Yeah, they're making progress.
Yes, the captain would have gone down. With, you know, the three red shirts.
Of course. And Sinricky.
But anyways, the whole discussion at Darwin Station is when Pulaski is, you know, the one doctor on the station, because she doesn't beam down, not yet. But the doctor on the station's like, oh, well, you know, it's too late for us, but you have to save our children. And, you know, everybody's like, what? It's like there's an awkward silence, an awkward pause on the Enterprise. We're like, what do you mean children? And they kind of start talking. They start realizing that, like, you know, they couldn't have been infected. They're isolated. So whatever is impacting us is not impacting them. And that's when they start getting into the whole, these kids were, you know, they bring up genetic engineering, and the one doctor on the station's like, no, they weren't engineered. They were designed.
Like, we're going to have this conversation.
Yeah. It's like, you can almost tell, like, they're going to have, like, we're really going to talk about this.
And, you know, that seemed kind of strange to me when I was watching it, because at least in the Enterprise era, they had strict rules about genetic engineering. I'm pretty sure they had it in the original series as well. And it's like, wait a second. So these guys are genetic engineering on humans? Isn't that against, like, Starfleet regulations or something?
You actually bring up something that I was able to research. Ooh, all of the discussions on the engineering, the genetic engineering bans, were discussed, or the episodes were made after this one. So even the Enterprise episode wasn't brought up in the original series. They talk about what happened with Khan and his people, the eugenics, but they never mention the ban. The ban is discussed in Deep Space Nine and Star Trek Enterprise.
And now Discovery. Because of Stamets, when they're doing the whole, you know, spore drive thing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's interesting. And, I mean, if because of Bashir, spoiler alerts for Deep Space Nine, because of who he is and his background, it was illegal then, so you would think it would have been illegal 3 or 4 years earlier during this TNG time.
Okay, I got some good headcanon for this.
Okay.
So there was a different administration, the president of the Federation. He came in, he, like, lifted the ban, and then, you know, it got put back in when there was a new president elected. That's what happened.
Or they lifted the ban and this happened, and they're like, well, that was a bad idea.
this is a terrible idea. Like, look, you said you were just going to change hair color. They're like, well, we did. They were born with blonde hair, now they have dark hair.
They're 12 years old, and they look like they're 18. How about that?
So that's actually when they finally get a hold of one of the children. They're like, well, let's beam one of the kids on board so we can at least investigate why they're not sick. So we can at least kind of have like a case sample of what healthy is versus what unhealthy is. And they keep having all these. They don't get into a lot of details on the engineering of the children. But they beam him up, and he's, like, in this styrolite, like, almost like, I don't even know how to describe it. It looks like
80s rubber sort of foam.
Yeah, it's like a rubber cement glue.
It reminded me of, like, a vacuum form kind of thing. Like,
yeah.
You're going to make some stormtrooper armor.
It's like looks like clear ABS is what it looks like, clear plastic. So they beam him up, and, you know, Pulaski's like, he's perfect. It's like, there's nothing I can find that's wrong with them. I'm going to take the styrolite off. And the best part is, when they first beam up the child on board, Worf and Geordi instantaneously, I believe it's Worf, it's like, oh, deception, it's a trap, or whatever he screams. He wants to, because Geordi wants to beam the kid back.
Yeah.
Because they said they were beaming a 12-year-old child. And like Timothy just said, whoever they beamed up was like a 22-year-old man.
Dude.
It was a 22-year-old dude. Not a 12-year-old kid. It was obviously a legitimate adult, which just even raised more questions. But the reason why that's important is because that's when Pulaski's realizing, oh, he's healthy, but we got to figure out what's going on. There's something not right here. People are dying of old age on the station, on the ship. The only ones not sick are the kids. And that's when her and Picard start having clashes. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were always kind of having clashes, but it gets to the point where she wants to do stuff. Picard doesn't want her to do anything until they investigate further. And there's actually a great scene where Pulaski's interrupting Picard, and he lets her finish like a good captain. Then he says, all right, let me think about it. And then he walks away and says, by the way, doctor, I would appreciate if you'd let me finish my sentences from time to time. And then he just walks out. I'm like, that's actually a good captain. He lets his crew finish talking, then makes his point as he's leaving, because he just got the last word.
Mm-hmm. Very subtle. Very subtle.
Very subtle. And I know people bring up her interrupting as like a similar, like they always call Pulaski the female McCoy. The reason why I have a problem with that is McCoy was beloved, and people constantly complain about Pulaski. So I'm like, if she's a female McCoy, and similar to McCoy with the kind of brashness, a little bit of arrogance, a little bit of comedy, so what's the problem? Like, I never really took any personally that she was on the show. She was fine. Some of the stories that Derek has brought up were a little weak because of the writer's strike. I don't know if...
Yeah, it wasn't her fault.
It's not like any of them were on their A game. During season 2, I mean, Patrick Stewart was, but Patrick Stewart doesn't have a B game. He's just Patrick Stewart. But it was always kind of the thing I wanted to highlight about her on this episode, and Derek's heard me on the podcast before say this, my one complaint about Next Generation was everybody's perfect. You know, Data's perfect. You know, Worf is the perfect warrior. He's the tries to be the perfect Klingon. Riker is just, he plays music, he's athletic, he's intelligent. They're all perfect. And you get Pulaski on board, and Pulaski's not. She's got a little bit of arrogance, she's got a little bit of attitude, she's got a little bit of confrontation. She's almost kind of thinking, like, if I'm not a psychiatrist, I think if somebody were to diagnose her, they'd be like, hey, she doesn't think she's good enough. So that's why she constantly has this bravado to challenge people and push authority and everything. Even though apparently this episode's even like, you came up with that viral thesis like 20 years ago. That's still the standard baseline. And Pulaski's like,
that was a long time ago.
That was a long time ago.
But she is the most human character.
She is by
from the main group.
Yes, she is.
You know, and like the reason I don't like her is I don't like how she treated Data early on in the season. Right. But that's, you know, that she gets past that. There's a point where that doesn't happen anymore. And she's very good at her job. There's no question about that. She takes some risks that Picard's not super thrilled about, but some of that's also the fact that Picard has to captain a ship with a bunch of families on board. You know, there's children and there's civilians and stuff like that. You know, there's barbers and teachers. And, you know,
the Pulaski
fence
theme.
Instructors,
14 science labs. And...
The Pulaski being like a Next Generation version of McCoy. I never really noticed that until it was pointed out to me in the Next Generation Blu-ray previews, and I'm like, oh, I guess she kind of is a McCoy. But the difference between McCoy and her really is the rapport that Kirk has with McCoy. So if Pulaski had a history with Picard, and they went way back, you know, her interrupting him would probably make a little bit more sense and kind of questioning him, because they have that... They have that rapport, they have that friendship, which, by the way, the other Dr. Crusher has that sort of thing with Picard, so, interesting.
She interrupts Picard all the time, and Picard just, you know, goes along with it because of their previous relationship.
In this episode, there's actually an instance towards the end where Data interrupts Picard, and it's obvious, and Picard either they forgot about it, or they forgot about that thing that he had with Pulaski, or they just didn't care because it was Data, but to cut down the story... She realizes, all right, I have to actually be a doctor. I need to investigate this kid. I need to do some tests to figure out why they're so healthy and everybody else isn't. So they go on board. They do something pretty smart. They take him on board a shuttlecraft with Commander Data, who, you know, they even kind of say, well, we're assuming he's not going to be impacted by this illness or whatever, which is kind of a little neat. And they take the kid out of Styrolite. They're doing some testing. They're doing some discussion. She realizes that he's telepathic, too. Like, not like Troy empathic. Like, the kid is talking to Pulaski without verbalizing anything. He grabs her hand or whatever, very politely, wasn't being aggressive. But she immediately has, like, arthritic pain, which they said was one of the first symptoms, kind of unusual. I know they picked it because the common viewer knows arthritis is bad, and it typically relates to people who are approaching elderly age. So I know that's why they picked that symptom. But she immediately has it, and it's, like, crippling. Because she drops her medical tools, and they realize everything's bad. They beam the kid back down to the planet. And she actually goes back to the planet with them, because she's all infected. And I will say, this is where the episode doesn't really stop, but this is kind of where the primary storyline ends. Because, yeah, they work on a resolution to find out what's going on. The end result is they go into further discussions about, well, if we use her old DNA... from like a transporter pad, from a transporter scan, we can use that to filter out whatever this genetic variance is that the kids have. The doctor on the planet's talking about, well, the kids are perfect in design, and well, what about their immune system? Well, that's the best part, let me tell you. It's like the Joker in the original Batman movie in 89. Well, that's the gag. You already have all these products. And the doctor on the ground's like, well, that's the best part, is their immune system doesn't wait to get sick. It creates antibodies when exposed to something and pursues and attacks.
Which actually, now that I think about it, it wasn't until you mentioned this, the children are in isolation, right? Did the first officer actually have any contact with those children?
That's a good point, because
if they're supposedly in isolation, can't get airborne diseases, then...
The only thing I can think of is the way they describe that their antibodies go out and are attacking everything. They were already attacking, like, the genetic code of the other doctors on the ground. And somehow being exposed to the illusion flu messed up the people not in isolation. That's the only way around a lot that I could find logically. Because you're right, the kids were in isolation the whole time. And by the way, they're also telekinetic. They can move stuff with their minds.
It definitely seemed like the flu is what kicked things off. Like, everybody at the station was healthy, so the immune system had nothing to do. And then all of a sudden, this disease shows up, and the immune system kicks it into high gear and goes crazy destroying everything, right? I think that's kind of the basic premise of that. But, I mean, there are some holes there, because clearly it means their isolation never worked.
Yeah, the isolation was...
Right.
Whoever designed this station, Darwin Station, Charles Darwin would be very upset with you. For disgracing his name multiple times. But it kind of ends when she beams down to the planet with the kid because she's not really involved in the rest of the story. She has some discussions with the Enterprise, but it's really Riker and Data that come up with a resolution with O'Brien and company to help fix everything.
Speaking of her connection to Bones, though, she also doesn't like using transporters.
She doesn't like transporters. And they even contact her old captain on the Repulse, and he's like, yeah, I would have given her a shuttle if I would have kept her. Or if it would have kept her and all that, which is kind of a fun little throwback.
Well, that's how Picard learns that she has, you know, really high respect and holds him in high regard, and she might push him a bit to get something she truly feels is right, but that's only because she respects him so much and believes it's worth the argument. Mm-hmm. You know.
But they get the resolution, they're able to figure out what's going on, and then they kind of save the day. There is no end result of what happens with Darwin Station that we know of. You would think that, like Timothy said, there would be some horrible Starfleet would be like the new president would be like, all right, wait a second. This is bad, and we got to figure out what we're going to do.
We're going to put this into the Starfleet secrets of nobody knows anything about this. Put it under the rug. This didn't happen.
Well, so at the we're left with Starfleet them you know, right. Basically saying that these kids now have to live out their lives in isolation. There's a couple of problems with this. One, we don't know how old this new species essentially would live. Humans are already living to be 150 easy, right? So they're going to live to be 200. They should have the lifespan of a Vulcan, right? But because they have telekinetic abilities and telepathic abilities and incredible immune systems and strength and intelligence, are they going to be cool with staying there?
It would make another good story if somebody would bring it back up and be like, no, it didn't turn out well. Like, we almost created, like, a new Khan or something.
Exactly! You'd think they'd want to do the exact same thing that Khan did. At the very least, they wouldn't want to be trapped.
Yeah.
At a minimum.
Stuck in a glass cage forever.
Right? They'd want to find at least, like, an uninhabited planet for them to, you know, colonize on their own.
And the throwback to what we were joking about earlier about that there's no male nurses, this is my theory. Because I was doing some research on this episode. There was supposed to be an attractive female comic love interest of some kind on the ship named Rena that was cut, and she was replaced with O'Brien. No joke. Even on Memory Alpha, where there was going to be a comedic love interest of some kind that with like LaForge, but it wasn't supposed to be like serious. It was supposed to be almost like just fun dating, teasing,
bonding, and Moneypenny.
Yeah, exactly.
Gotcha.
But she was replaced. And replaced with O'Brien, like that whole storyline was cut. I'm wondering if because of the writer's strike, because one thing about that kid, who wasn't a kid, was a young male adult, I was wondering if they were originally going to unfreeze him on the ship and cause some problems because the young nurses, they were going to do something along the lines where their immune system, they're also telepathic, but their immune systems are so aggressive, it somehow draws people towards them.
Hmm.
And do a weird storyline where they're physically, you know, 20, 22, 23, but mentally, no, they have no idea what's going on. They're like, that would have been way too edgy for Star Trek back in 89.
But that's fun idea.
But when you read about the stuff with the cut character of Rena, I'm like, maybe they were going to do something like that. Maybe I'm reading way too into it.
It's an interesting concept. I mean, Geordi kind of always has a complicated love life. It never really goes well for him.
From Leah Brahms to whoever. It's always been complicated for him.
It has. But, I mean, this is an opportunity for O'Brien to show himself a bit. And, of course, as people know, he ends up getting promoted to a full-time cast member in DS9. So maybe if this hadn't happened, it wouldn't have led to more of his smaller roles.
There's even a moment where him and LaForge are kind of having a little back and forth. on some engineering stuff. And O'Brien drops in. He's like, well, technically you're right, but if you let me do this, this, and this, it'll work. And even LaForge's like, eh. Not bad, O'Brien. Not bad.
He was showing himself.
That's why I picked Unnatural Selection for Pulaski, Diana Muldaur. I mean, she's confrontational. She's interrupting. She's actually like a few doctors I know. But you kind of see her at her best and at her worst when she's really aggressive. Her best when she realizes that she kind of screwed up and she even admits it. And when she thinks she's dying on the planet, she actually contacts the ship, is like, this is the last log of the medical officer. And, you know, just like as evolution created us, Evelyn, et cetera, evolution can also end us or whatever. And that's when Picard's like, all right, this is not happening. Because he even threatens to beam her up against her will. And while she's in, not cryogenic freeze.
Suspended
animation.
Yeah.
And even she's like, no, you can't take the risk, blah, blah, blah. So that was kind of nice. She started off a little confrontational, and they were able to bond enough and interrupt each other enough to the point where, at the end, her willingness to sacrifice herself for a mistake, and Picard's like, no, this is not how it ends. And he tells his crew, he's like, find a solution, and you've got 20 minutes to do it because they're all dying.
Mm-hmm.
So
she's supposed to be a medical officer. A medical officer kind of strikes me as someone who's going to be cautious. Crusher strikes me as cautious, McCoy cautious. All of the medical officers strike me as someone who's cautious.
And Phlox isn't cautious.
No, Phlox is...
And Bashir is definitely cautious.
That's true. That's not true. Cautious. Okay, you're right about that.
Sir, the Geminar bombing the planet from space, he's like, well, if we beam down, we might be okay.
And
That was war.
War. Not to spoil anything for Discovery for anybody who hasn't seen it yet.
That's true.
Culber should have been more cautious. And maybe his fate would have been different. So,
yeah. Anyway, the whole thing is that it makes me feel like she was taking a lot of unnecessary risks that someone with her sort of experience wouldn't necessarily do. And they acknowledge that, oh, this was a mistake. You shouldn't have done this. But why would you risk that to begin with? And it just didn't really work for me. It made me feel like it made me think that she's just a lot more incompetent than they were actually making her out to be.
She's the inspiration to Dr. Gregory House, though. I don't know, I just made that
it's
up.
Not lupus.
It's not lupus.
It's never lupus.
It's never lupus.
I saw it more as she kind of has a tunnel vision. Oh, so the running joke in the House show was that, like, in basically every episode...
Gotcha.
You know, his assistants would say that it was lupus, and it would never be lupus.
It's never lupus.
Like, I think, like, in one time it was lupus, right? Like, in the whole series. But anyway, I feel like it was more of Pulaski kind of has a tunnel vision. This is her job, and this is her responsibility, and anything else is more of just noise getting in the way of that. And so that, I think, is why she needs Picard to balance her out and why Picard also needs her, because he pushes her to rein things in and do things in a relatively safe manner, but she still pushes him enough to get results, because the truth is that if she hadn't done the stuff on the shuttlecraft, everybody on the station was going to be dead. We'd have no idea how to handle this.
Mm-hmm.
And they probably never would have figured out the immune system being such a problem for everybody. Because now you both brought up a good, like, an ethical point that Star Trek always talked about. Do they now have to quarantine the whole planet? Or what are they going to do with these kids? Mm-hmm. And that's why I like, as Star Trek fans, we want to know that kind of stuff because it interests us.
Well, they frame it kind of loosely that they're going to have to live out their days in isolation. And it leaves the episode kind of feeling like the researchers on the station are going to be saved through the transporter method too. Fine. So are they just going to stay there and protect the kids who can't leave this isolation? I don't know. It's a little weird, right? Because obviously the isolation chamber wasn't working. So as long as they don't leave the planet, I guess that's all that really matters.
They're just going to have kind of a Truman Show thing going on. And they'll just be up there taking notes on the kids and be like, oh, they're doing this, they're doing this. That's really all they can do. Just set up surveillance and study the kids.
Turns out part of the genetic design, not engineering, the design, right?
Whoa.
Yeah, I know.
We don't use the word engineering.
No. Turns out they programmed the kids to somehow like being in isolation. It's like, that's what they want to be is.
Maybe, I guess.
This is our home.
It's a possibility.
Then you have to ask why even create them.
Right, yeah. Alright, well, anything else to talk about on Unnatural Selection before we move on?
A few other notes. I mean, we talked... I did like what you said, Pulaski. Pulaski was very self-reflective. Once she realized she made a mistake, she's like, oh, well, okay, I'm gonna own up to this. That was on me. But, I don't know, the scientists and everybody just seem so stupid in this episode.
They're almost, like, arrogant. Yeah. See, like that dangerous kind of arrogance where... Well, what do you mean? What's wrong with designing humans? We love it.
Well, it's not even so much that is they believe that whatever they did all worked perfectly all the time. And then it's not an experiment. If you know that you did it right, then it's not an experiment, right? So clearly this is something that's still in the testing phases and mistakes could have been made. Otherwise, why would you even bother having them in isolation if they were going to work perfectly? So it's that, again, it's maybe that those blinders of they just feel like their way is the only way, and anything else is just a distraction.
Hey, we have, you know, we have this problem here. We're all aging, and, you know, it can't be this ridiculous science experiment over here in the corner that is completely perfect and is not malfunctioned. It can't be that. Also, you know, I have to say it because I say it pretty much any time Troy is in an episode and says anything. She was dumb in this episode because she... There's a scene... where they're talking about taking the kid out of Styrolite. And Troy's all like, oh, well, I don't detect anything. You can do that. That's cool. And I wrote down in my notes, Troy is dumb. Why are the scientists dumb? Everyone is dumb.
There's a lot of not quite thinking in detail in this episode. I will say in Troy's defense that once she becomes an officer, much better character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's written so much better when they finally let her be an officer and go through that.
And nothing against Marina Sirtis, no, but she's lovely. Just, they did not give that poor actress very much to do in these early episodes.
And some of it, I mean, I've seen some interviews with Marina, and one of her things was she wanted to let the writers do what the writers wanted to do. It was from her perspective, it was the writer's job to write the character and her job to then act that dream out, right? Whereas somebody like Patrick Stewart or Gates McFadden pushed the production and writing team in certain directions for certain things. Patrick Stewart, of course, because of, you know, being the lead on the show, he had a little more leeway and things like that. And part of why Gates McFadden missed season two is because she created some bad blood on the production staff because she was very opinionated. And sometimes that works for you and sometimes it doesn't. But I think for Marina, you know, part of why she was able to stick around so long was because she really just let the writers do whatever they wanted, good or bad, for the character. So I get it. I totally understand that standpoint. And, you know, to be fair, we got her for all seven seasons and all four movies. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and her character did get better over time.
Yes. Yes, she did. Just in this episode, you have Pulaski who's like, let's take him out to, let's unlock this kid. And Troy is basically the only person who's on your side.
Or, you know, I detect, you know, the scientists, they're definitely hiding something. Like, thanks, that's, you know, we're at a secret genetic research location. I mean, it's like saying Derek might be hungry. I mean, maybe, I don't know.
Why, you got some pizza?
There we go, see? It's just that catch-all thing they did with Troy.
There were a lot of those tropes. You know, just like with Worf, if you wanted to show that an enemy was really strong, you just have them throw Worf across the room.
You know?
That's right. That was rough, because in the process, it makes Worf weak.
Yeah.
Because he always gets taken down by the enemies. Anyway, that's all I have for this episode.
Greg, anything else?
Nope, it's my pick for my favorite Pulaski episode. And, you know, the older I watch, again, the more I watch this episode, the more it's definitely kind of goofy. Yeah. And not necessarily the best of ways, because there are so many characters that do things that baffle logic. But, yeah. You know, I'll give the writer's strike of season two a little bit of defense here for Next Generation.
Fair
enough. All right, well then we will move on to our second episode. Timmy, tell us a bit about Up the Long Ladder.
So, Up the Long Ladder...
Which, I'm just going to go ahead and say it. I don't understand the title of this episode.
Okay, I think I might be able to explain this. Just me throwing it out there, though. I didn't do any research. Up the Long Ladder, I kind of thought that meant the genetic ladder, perhaps. The idea of...
That's interesting.
You know, mom and dad come together, other mom and dad come together, and eventually we have this whole genetic ladder, genetic system that's made. That's how I took it.
Fair enough.
But up the long ladder, I kind of gave a brief summary of it earlier. So they go to this planet, and they there's like a, I think there's a distress signal at this planet. A lot of distress signals. What do you know?
Season two.
And Picard is looking through the manifest and sees all these strange items, like a spinning wheel. And it's just like, why do they need a spinning wheel? It's a colony. And when they go to the planet, they because the planet's about ready to explode or, you know, something.
As planets do.
They just do that. They do that. No Death Star needed. They just do that.
Just blow up.
In Star Trek, they just explode.
So, they beam them all up, and these people are very much a rural society, and they all are Irish, apparently, too. Interesting. They're all Irish, and they all have their livestock, and they're going to be recolonized. And they're like, hey, what about the other colony? Did you get run into the other colony? Are they doing okay? And Picard's like, oh, another colony. So they go to this other colony, and there, instead of, I would like to describe the first colony, the Irish colony. We're just going to call them the Irish colony for that just works. Their colony is all about life, like natural life, living life to the full. And I love that. I love that little line that the leader of the colony says. He's like, "Well, you know, life's worth a little good with a little pain, or something like that." With drinking alcohol, for example, mm-hmm. It's like, "Oh, a little pain. There we go." But they go to that other colony, and the colony apparently has had to rely on cloning to survive. So they ask Riker and Pulaski if they would offer some of their genetic material, because of the whole problem with cloning to begin with is that you have a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy. You do that enough times and you just don't have a really... You don't really have a good clone.
You get multiplicity, yeah. Michael Keaton.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. They should have just played that on the holodeck. And,
and yeah, well, Pulaski and Riker refuse. And they stun them and take their genetic material anyway. And this was actually the reason why I chose this episode, was the ethical dilemma. But what I found interesting was when I was initially selecting this episode, they had all these summaries, you know, online about the episodes. I'm like, not this one, not this one. I'm like, oh, this one. And for some reason, I thought I remembered them hanging out on the clone planet a lot longer than they did. It took a good 25, 30 minutes to get to that episode. And at which point I'm like, what are you trying to, what's this episode about? Are we just kind of gonna hang out with these Irish people and drink meat in space, which I'm totally okay with, by the way? Or are you trying to make a point? Well, make a long story short, Riker and Pulaski aren't too happy about them getting their genetic material stolen. So they go down and kill their clones, which I kind of liked the ethical dilemma that they ran into with that, because they didn't hesitate. They just killed them. They're like, nope, this is not a life form at all. We're going to kill him. Boom.
I felt like they kind of brush over that a little quick.
Yeah.
For Star Trek.
A lot of quick.
Like, there's just no question about it. He's like, well, this one looks like mine. Zap. This one looks like yours. You good? Yep. All right.
And it kind of falls back to, yeah, I think you kind of mentioned earlier, we never really know if these are like, are these planets in Federation space or not.
I think they are. Because it didn't seem like, because the Enterprise was doing like normal mission stuff, so I feel like that was supposed to be Federation space.
Which you think then killing the clones would be a huge problem for...
Especially if they're supposed to be life forms. I mean, you could kind of walk around the whole band thing that we were talking about with the previous episode, about them not genetic engineering, because a clone is a clone. It's a copy. They're not doing anything with it. They're just making one. You might be able to be like, well, you see, it's subsection B of that band. We can get away with this. We're good.
Maybe with cloning, because they never figured out how to handle the viability problem, maybe there just aren't clones in Starfleet or the Federation. Maybe that's just not really a common thing that we run into.
Well, we definitely don't see it very much in Star Trek now that I think about it.
Not often.
No.
You know, so maybe it's just one of those things where the Federation doesn't necessarily have, or the Starfleet doesn't necessarily have regulations about it because it's just not really done.
Hmm. There's the one DS9 episode where the man murders his own clone and frames somebody else, and it's a really bizarre episode. But,
right!
But he was like a Bajoran. He was not a terrorist, but he was in like one of the cells in the Bajoran army, the resistance, but he kind of became a little bit, obviously a little twisted with his ethics right. as the older he got, and being willing to kill his own clone.
Hmm.
Well, and to also, be fair, Sisko does nuke the atmosphere of an entire planet to get to one dude, so...
Deep Space Nine got pretty dark, but it's war, okay? It's war. That's true. Get away with that.
Yeah.
And now that I think about it, Enterprise did have that episode similitude with they basically clone Trip and... so that they could have the organs to save real Trip. So yeah, I guess
I forgot
that's
about that one. Yeah. I don't remember that one at all.
I love that one. That's a good one. We could spend a whole podcast talking about that one. But I think the reason I chose this one was that I was expecting it to have a lot more to talk about with the ethics, because I really liked what they introduced here. They introduced this whole idea, and it's like, oh, you're saying that you can just go and kill your clone. Well, you know, you can symbolically talk about abortion in this episode. You can symbolically talk about rape in this episode because, you know, they had something taken from them and then they made a life form from it. Does that life form have a right to survive? That's a good question. And they really glossed over that. So that's where the episode kind of falls for me.
And yeah, they posed a lot of dilemmas and then kind of sidestepped all of them. So
think about it. Season 2 had a lot of ethical stuff because it had the whole Measure of a Man with Data. Mm-hmm. It had your episode with the cloning and the unnatural selection with the genetic engineering. Yours kind of had no... Neither of ours had resolution. We have no idea what happened with the kids. We have no idea what happened with the clones.
And by the way, this was something interesting. At the beginning of this episode, Worf apparently has like this... He has this reaction, which you think that's going to be what the whole episode is about, because that was a little teaser where Worf has this reaction and passes out on the bridge. And then Pulaski, you know, is like, hey, you have Klingon measles. I won't tell anyone, though. We're
yeah,
good.
That doesn't go anywhere.
Nowhere. It's like, what do you... I think there's a follow-up scene. I do think that those are good Pulaski scenes. Her interaction with Worf in both those scenes where they're drinking the tea.
The Klingon tea ceremony, yes.
So those were two good Pulaski moments, but they really had nothing to do with the episode.
Well, that's okay. I think that like the tea scene, I think, is really important because it shows her interest in other cultures, right? That she's not just a human for humans. She wants to experience other cultures, and she respects them quite a bit, especially when there's not, you know, life and death on the line kind of thing. Like, you know, like when Worf goes through his rite of ascension with the pain sticks, right? You know, like, that's a lot more brutal and you can really get injured and stuff like that. But this is a very, like, respectful thing, right? This is about respecting others, and it's a very private ceremony, which is a big deal for Klingons.
Yeah, and I liked both those scenes. Those were two of my favorite scenes in the episode. Two Pulaski scenes, good for her. But they just didn't... I don't know if they really did anything for the episode itself. Usually A story and B story in a Star Trek episode sort of work together and then come together. A story, I felt, was the Mary Irish ship running through the ship that we're drinking mead. And B story was the clone story. And then those two stories came together because, spoiler alert, that's kind of how the clones ended up surviving. They had to mesh with the Irish colony.
And of course, if this was a Star Trek drinking game, Riker wasted no time at all on getting to know one of the new guests.
Yep.
Oh man, it's so good. I'm drawing a blank on the line, but when he first goes in the cargo bay, there's a line that he has, and I had to pause it and play it back for Ray because it was just like the smoothest thing. Do you guys remember what I'm talking about?
How much you ever seen a woman before? I have now.
Oh, no, I thought I had. I thought I had. That was the line.
That's the line. I thought I had.
I thought I had. Hey, baby. That right there is like the most Riker thing that ever happened. And I loved it. I really did. She's a great character, though. Like, I had a huge crush on her.
You're almost thinking, like, I know, and we always wish it now. It's easy to do it 30 years later. She would have been a great addition to the crew. They would have found some weird, silly way to make her, like, an acting cultural resources officer. You can teach us about how people live on your planet. Because the actress is cool. She's been on a bunch of stuff and a bunch of sci-fi stuff. And she holds her own with Riker easily.
Yeah.
Like,
there was some good chemistry there.
Well, and that's what I mean. Is that I know people have commented on Riker before that sometimes the female part of his relationship interest doesn't always seem as interested. It's like, this woman can hold her own with anybody on that ship. And she has no doubt about it.
Embrace the technology, right? Because she made a comment about how, you know, they wanted to put all the kids in the schools and teach them things. And her father's like, well, how do you feel about that? She's like, I think it's a good idea. So I thought she was a lot of fun. It's kind of a shame that the TV was so episodic back then, because today she would have been around for at least a handful of episodes.
Well, because they have the instant rating systems, basically, where they're like, they can figure out online within an hour, you know, Timothy, Derek, and Greg are tweeting about this actress or whatever, or her scenes, and they immediately know. I mean, Discovery made changes halfway through some of their filming of the first season based on feedback.
Mm-hmm.
So we know, you're right, they maybe would have found a way to... Lieutenant Commander already. We're like, wait a second.
But she could have easily they could have strung this mission out. Like, maybe it wasn't a, you know, 3 hours to get between the colonies. Maybe it took a week, right? And so it spanned a couple of episodes where they, you know, checked out an anomaly or something like that.
I would have liked that better, actually. And then, because you could have taken just the clone thing and you could have made that an episode.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And that was just so creepy when Pulaski and Riker get taken to that room and you have these guys with these hoods on and they're sticking these big old needles into their stomach. You're like, oh, it's about to get real, man.
I mean, you could kind of, now, of course, we're looking at this in retrospect. You know, we already have Voyager. They didn't have it back then. But there was, I'm drawing a blank on the title of the episode. That's one of my favorites. It's the one where they go to that planet where there's like that living Mercury that becomes sentient and takes over and becomes like Harry Kim, for example, but it's not really Harry Kim. It's this alien, and they have to sample DNA, and they can basically become sentient beings using your DNA samples. And by the end of the episode, Janeway basically offers them that she will open up the crew, and anybody on the crew who wants to provide a DNA sample is welcome to do so. And they do. And so when Voyager leaves the planet at the end of the episode, there's dozens of these now essentially cloned Voyager people who are these Mercury creatures, and it even comes back in an episode. I think it's called, is it Course Oblivion? I think maybe is the pseudo sequel episode to it. And so, like, they kind of did that a little bit. And I think in this case, if it had been less episodic, they could have had more of the crew involved. Maybe it's not just Pulaski and Riker. Maybe it's a couple dozen people, and a bunch of people have to be involved. And maybe somebody doesn't think it's okay to destroy the clone, right? And you can kind of have that back and forth. But it was 1988, 89, and this was as risky as they were going to get, I guess.
Yeah, just... Anyway, so that's why I picked that episode. I like the ethical issues, and I feel that Pulaski is really good in this episode. She's more of a cautious medical officer, as opposed to unnatural selection. She's like, oh, that kid's fine. Let's open them up. You know, we're going to open up this really dangerous science experiment right now. There's nothing wrong with it. And this one, she's like, they took our samples. We need to go and do something about this. And, you know, Pulaski, now natural selection. Ooh, they took our samples. They went and cloned them. I'm going to go watch.
I'm going to go beat the clone.
Yeah.
But your episode in the timeline did fall after unnatural selection. Maybe she learned finally.
Learned.
You know, it took her 20 years and 22 years in Starfleet to, man, I've been screwing up for a long time.
I mean, it's an interesting idea that maybe she did. She learned a lot from that experience because she almost died. And if Picard had let her go do her own thing from the beginning, most of the crew may have died.
Or all of the data.
Very likely. You know, 1,000 people could have been killed under her watch from that decision. And maybe she learned that she needs to be a little more cautious in this type of environment because she's not, you know, at a special research station. She is on this family vessel flagship with normal people. So,
well, And something, Timothy, I just clicked in my brain. Because you mentioned an unnatural selection. The kids were in isolation, never exposed to the first officer with the illusion flu. But they brought up the flu like five different times. But when Pulaski meets the kid, they're on a shuttlecraft. She was never exposed to the flu. And if they were in isolation, the kids were never exposed to the flu. So what the flu? What was the flu? The point of the flu?
Okay, hang on.
Okay, I can explain this away, except for the whole isolation thing still negates my theory on that.
But... No, you're right, though, because the whole premise is supposed to be that the flu is what basically turned... Well, okay, maybe the flu turned on their immune system, and there's just no turning it off.
Ah, okay.
My thought is anytime you have a disease, you never really... Like, a cold, you never get that cold, the same cold, again.
Maybe somehow she had it. And
she...
I actually think it's more of...
Like, their immune system was exposed to it. Their immune system gave it to her, and it just... Oh, wait. No, that doesn't make sense either.
Yeah, their immune system would have destroyed it. I think what it was is the flu kickstarted their immune system, because they had been in isolation from the rest of the galaxy, right? And so as long as the researchers didn't have anything, which they probably would not have given the situation, then they were fine. But the flu kickstarted their immune system. Once their immune system was turned on and attacking things, it was going to attack anything it saw as a possible threat, which would include other biological life that could infect them. Because that's kind of the point about that Pulaski makes about how the new species is deadly to the previous species. Because that's just what it is. If you come in contact in the same air as them, that's it. You're done. Right? A matter of days or however long.
Survival of the fittest.
It is.
There we go.
Yeah. So I think that's what that was. But
literal Darwin.
Yeah. So yeah, the one other thing I did have about Up the Long Ladder was... And maybe they have this in your episode as well, but they had special appearance by the Pulaski actress. Was she ever in the credits?
She was constant in my episode as well, special appearance by Diana Molnar.
That's just so weird.
Yeah, I think she always was, because I believe she had only signed on for the one season, officially. Because, you know, at the end of the day, she was a replacement for Gates McFadden, when Gates McFadden was more or less asked to not return. And a lot of the cast was not, you know, thrilled with that. I mean, Patrick Stewart basically lobbied to bring her back. So I believe that you know, the Pulaski character had really only been addressed for the one season. And they didn't necessarily have plans for that character to continue after that.
That makes no sense whatsoever. As far as you got to have a medical officer.
But they could have had somebody else.
It's the
Federation flagship. You could have that, you know, churning over any time, different specialists at different times. And
so the medical officer is basically the defense against the dark arts position of Enterprise. Is that how it's going? Yeah,
kind of.
Like, let's be really honest. The fact that the TNG crew, the main crew, the bridge officers, are together for what is essentially 14 years makes very little sense. Most of these characters should have been promoted out of their positions and left the ship. By the end of Nemesis, we've got two captains and, like, everybody else is a commander, you know? When we started, I mean, you know, Geordi was a lieutenant, Worf was a lieutenant, Data was a lieutenant, and by the end of it, everybody's a commander.
Well, that always begs the question, you know, Data, you know, that one episode where he's like, oh, Legion of Honor with, like, triple clusters. You're like, why isn't this dude like an admiral? Like, well, at this point, he's won every... And I know it falls back to the whole he's not a human thing.
Yes, yeah.
But it, like you said, it's... At some point, Starfleet being a pseudo-military, Riker, the more he turns down a promotion, like, well, okay, you don't get a choice. You will either become captain of this ship, or we're going to foster you out somewhere else, because...
Well, you think at some point they're just not going to ask him again.
Yeah, or they're never going to ask ever again.
But Geordi, Worf, I mean, even Dr. Crusher, you know, now, theoretically, she ends up getting promoted to the head of Starfleet Medical, but it takes a long time, and she's been the flagship chief medical officer for a decade, you know? So,
well, Geordi, they had to. And the reason they had to is because Argyle, he never really left the Enterprise. He's still there, actually, to this day. He's somewhere in the Jeffries tubes.
He's just lost.
Just doing his thing, you know? That's just Argyle, in a nutshell.
But, you know, I mean, that's kind of
the chief engineer from, like, the second episode.
I like the idea.
They make references to him throughout the rest of season one, but that's the only time you see him.
But I think it makes sense that characters would move on. I mean, like Chief does, like O'Brien. Right. You know, O'Brien moves on. And you could call when he gets a DS9 a promotion or not. I think there could be an argument there to be had. But the idea is that he moves on to other things. Whereas after season one, when Worf and Geordi move into their new roles, nobody changes positions after that. Hmm. They're all in the exact same job for the rest of the time until the end of Nemesis when Riker gets his own ship, you know. Then things change a little bit. But that's it. And that really the only change there happened because LeVar Burton was very popular and Denise Crosby quit. Worf was only supposed to be on 17 episodes. So, you know.
And he became one of the top three fan favorites, probably.
He's been in more Star Trek than any other actor. Unless you count voice appearances, which would be Majel Barrett. So.
And they would really labor to put him in Star Trek, the Star Trek movies. I mean,
yep. You know, I'm a little off topic, but yes.
I was told about this, and you can delete this later if you want.
No,
but
no,
I was told about this by some people, like Insurrection. They don't even explain why he's there. They're just like, Worf, what are you doing here? And I think he's about ready to explain it, and then they just pan off. They're like, okay, he's
they
here.
They totally cut it. No, it's true. Well, sir. And then they just move the camera to another spot.
Just, we need Michael Dorn. Let him be on the ship.
At least
First Contact kind of made sense.
Well, and Nemesis because of the wedding.
Yeah, because of the wedding.
Right.
But Insurrection, yeah, they don't even, whatever.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
You need Worf. If you're making a Next Generation movie, you need Worf. But anyway, Pulaski.
So yeah, so we are over our normal time, which is great, because this has actually been a lot of fun. We didn't mention this at the beginning, but we're recording this in person, which we don't usually get to do. And I will say that having done podcasts both ways, it's just a little more fun and free-flowing to do it in person, in my opinion.
You can see people's reactions. It's a little bit easier to edit because you can see people's responses. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're not necessarily waiting for someone to speak because you think there's a delay, you know, or something like that.
That must be a nightmare editing, isn't it?
It can be tough, you know. But all right, so any other final thoughts then on Up the Long Ladder before we wrap up?
It's another one of the episodes where the secondary characters steal the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The cloners, even though they're in it for a very short time, it's kind of an interesting theory, interesting thing they're doing. You don't necessarily agree with it, but you kind of get it. And the Irish planet, I know it's just what we're calling it. They're all just so... It's like the Titanic thing. It's like the business class people in Titanic are all horrible, mean, evil. And you go to like the steerage level, I'm like, they're all drinking, having fun and partying. I'm like, God bless the Irish.
I mean, that's a good comparison for what this was.
It's a contrast. That's what Up the Long Ladder is. It's a contrast between the scientific and the sterile environment, sterile way of life. You can just stay inside and not ever have any interaction with the outdoors. And I mean, they described what sexual reproduction is repugnant. That's how they described it. Or you can actually enjoy life and a little pain to enjoy life. I think that's the theme of the episode.
It is a little weird that aspect of the fact that they don't have any sexual contact with each other. You'd think that, I mean, maybe is it just because they got bored because there was not a lot of people? Or did the clones not like each other? I don't know. But
they never explored at all.
No. Okay.
I kind of implied that the more they cloned themselves,
the less they were into it.
Yeah, just a genetic thing. Mm. Which, of course, makes the whole episode fall apart at the end.
Yeah, the end is fun. All right, well, we will wrap up here then before we continue on these tangents. So, I thinking it over, and people out there listening, you will have a chance to vote on this at Twitter. If you follow us at RedShirtsPod, you'll be able to vote in this poll a couple hours after the episode premieres, which is on Friday. So the poll will run from midday Friday until midday Monday, because we record Monday nights and we can plug in the results in the next episode. So I'm going to go with Unnatural Selection in this one.
The defeat streak ends.
Greg's taking one home. No, this is a good one. I think that the premise is interesting, and I think that you learn so much about who Pulaski mm-hmm. is in this episode, which was kind of the argument I was making for Riker last week, was that you learn a lot about who she is and what she's willing to risk, what she's willing to do to learn the truth, whatever that truth ends up being. She's willing to put her own life on the line if that means getting some answers. And that's it. It kind of legitimizes her character for me.
It's very much a true Pulaski episode. And so you look at that one, you're like, this is a Pulaski episode. And I was tasked with trying to find another episode that was a true Pulaski episode. And I couldn't really find one that was like that. And there aren't really any full-on, bona fide Pulaski episodes except for that one.
I will say, going back to what we talked about earlier, Elementary Dear Data, the right conversation may have steered it. Because personally, it's one of my favorite episodes. So that's kind of a biased situation for me anyway. Because Moriarty is fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Get no argument for me on that. But the question is it a Pulaski episode?
Well, it doesn't have to be. So this is something we've kind of talked about. It doesn't have to be a Pulaski episode as long as it showcases the character well.
Fair enough.
Yeah, that's kind of my thing. Because Measure of a Man is a Picard and Data episode through and through. I just thought it showcased Riker well, for example.
Agreed.
Unnatural Selection is definitely a Pulaski episode. Mm-hmm. You know, this is to showcase who she is, what her abilities are, what her knowledge is. And her relationship with Picard and how that back and forth is going to work out. Why is she on the Enterprise? You know, we never really got that answer. You know, all of a sudden, there's no Crusher and we have Pulaski. What's this about? Now we understand that she wanted this. She wanted to be on the Enterprise with Picard because of XYZ. So, but if you agree or disagree, you will be able to vote on this at RedShirtsPod on Twitter. We are Redshirts and Runabouts on the Heroes Podcast Network. You can find us at heroespodcasts.com and at Heroes Podcasts on Facebook and Instagram, as well as Redshirts Pod on Twitter. The show is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Blog Talk Radio, anywhere that you have an app where you can plug in an RSS feed. Timmy, if people did want to reach out to you and talk Trek or your favorite fandom Star Wars, how might people do that?
Well, probably the best way to get a hold of me would be on Twitter, at Wookiee42. Don't forget, Wookiee has two E's. A lot of people forget that. And a lot of people don't find me as a result.
Fair enough. Greg?
And as always, you can find me at @_Bittersteel. We've had a lot of interesting chats with other podcasts on Twitter lately. I'm jealous of the whole crew going to Star Trek Las Vegas.
Oh, man. Yeah, I love all of these people. Like, they're just the best people to talk to, but I'm so jealous.
I am very jealous. Next year, it's my goal. I will be there.
You better not be.
You can come, too.
No, I can't. That's the weekend I'm getting married.
Whoa.
Get married in Vegas.
Well, so we're planning.
Not you and I.
Our goal is to go the following year for our one-year anniversary.
Oh.
So my 2020, STLV 2020. That's my goal here. But I am the Star Trek Dude on Twitter. Please come and chat Trek with me. I also host two other shows on the network, Screen Heroes and Gamer Heroes, our movie TV podcast and our video game podcast, because I like to talk. So thank you so much for joining us, everybody. We'll catch you guys next time.
Red Shirts and Runabouts is part of the Heroes Podcast Network. The show is hosted by myself, Gregory Bosco, along with Jeremy Munkin and Derek Mayer. The theme song is by Flying Killer Robots. You can find us, as well as other Heroes Podcast Network shows, at heroespodcast.com, as well as on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, Google Play, and anywhere you can use an RSS feed. Follow us on social media at Heroes Podcast on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitch. And you can also email us at contact@heroespodcast.com. Engage.